is 19-3070 Walker versus Corizon Health. Mr. Turner, you may proceed.
Thank you, and may it please the court. This appeal is about Dr. Sohee Mohideen, one doctor among 16 defendants on a claim of deliberate indifference after the unfortunate death of Mr. Davis of a rare brain infection. There are four main rules that apply to this appeal. Rule one, an inadvertent failure to provide adequate medical care does not violate the Constitution. Rule two, the burden is on the plaintiff to show that each defendant was aware of an excessive risk to inmate health and that each defendant disregarded that risk. Rule three, the burden is on the plaintiff to make clear exactly who is alleged to have done what to whom, so that each defendant has fair notice of the claims against him as opposed to collective allegations. Rule four, the burden is on the plaintiff to identify a Supreme Court case or Tenth Circuit decision where an official under similar circumstances was held to have violated someone's constitutional rights. The district court misapplied each of these four rules and should be reversed for any one of these errors.
You have a sequence of events here that seem to illustrate a fairly serious medical problem occurring over a number of months, right? And Mr. Davis was a frequent visitor to the infirmary, back pain, numbness, unable to walk, you know the record, et cetera, and culminates with an MRI that indicates, some as yet undiagnosed problem. At that point, don't we have an accumulation enough of indications of a serious medical condition that would put a reasonable doctor, any medical professional on notice that further testing was necessary or emergency room visit was necessary? Why isn't it obvious on this record that you at least make a prima facie case of deliberate indifference?
Well, a couple of things. The serious medical condition would meet the objective prong of the...
We have that here?
We do. We're not. We haven't appealed that issue of the deliberate indifference test, but the subjective prong of the deliberate indifference test is the culpable mental state. So the defendant must be aware of the condition and choose to disregard it. It's not a could have known standard. It's not a should have known standard. The failure to alleviate a risk that the doctor should have perceived but didn't is not the is not punishment under the Eighth Amendment. Must allege facts that Dr. Mohideen actually drew the inference. So specifically that paragraph 145, we actually have, it says, after an abnormal MRI, three doctors failed and refused to order immediate hospitalization. So a couple things here. We have a list of defendants without a distinction of who, what their roles are. We don't know from paragraph 145 if Dr. Mohideen actually saw the MRI or if he understood the MRI or if he had any authority to order the hospitalization. And then the description of paragraph 145, the decision of whether or not to order hospitalization is a matter of medical judgment. And even if medical judgment is objectively unreasonable, that still does not rise to a level of deliberate indifference.
Well, he was a radiologist who read the MRI, wasn't he?
That is not in the complaint. The complaint only says that he's a duly licensed physician.
It doesn't say he's a radiologist.
It's not in the complaint, no.
Well, we know he's a radiologist. I saw it somewhere. I'm not making it up. Where did I see that?
Yeah, I did. I think we did put a footnote in there to describe that we don't know what role he played in the complaint.
We don't know if he administered the MRI.
It's not in the complaint, no.
We don't know if he reviewed the results of the MRI.
It's not in the complaint.
Why isn't this more or less, the closest analogy according to opposing counsels. This is like a MATA. This is like a heart attack, and he needs to be looked at ASAP stat.
So in MATA, it was the one defendant that was held to have at least made it through the past the motion dismiss stage was a nurse who said, "I'm sorry, we're closed. The infirmary's closed. Can't do anything for you." So that's not what happened here. So we do know some facts.
Are you talking about the Robinson case?
I'm sorry?
Al Turkey v. Robinson. Is that the case you're talking about that's close?
Judge Tim Kovitz mentioned the MATA case. That's what I was referring to. So we do know some things from the amended complaint. The medical staff examined Mr. Davis. They monitored his condition. They documented his symptoms. They prescribed medication. They took an x-ray. They took an EMG of his legs. They obtained a neurology consultation. They tried to get a second neurology consultation. They took an EKG, and they took an MRI of his brain. So they treated Mr. Davis. They never denied treatment, never said we're closed. Each of the 46 times he presented himself, they attempted to treat his symptoms, and they documented his condition.
So of all the defendants, three of them are physicians.
I believe there's a John Doe physician listed in the caption.
So three named and a John Doe, right?
That's my understanding.
You say Mohedan is not identified as a radiologist. Are the other two or three, including the Doe, Dr. Doe, is their specialty specified?
My understanding from the amended complaint, they're all described as duly licensed physicians. If that's not true, I'll correct it in rebuttal. But
is there any allegation as to which one or which ones made the determination after the MRI that he goes back to... isolation rather than hospital?
I did not see that in the amended complaint, no. We do know from the amended complaint that Dr. Corbier was the regional medical director.
You speak in the microphone.
Yes, I'm sorry. We do know from the amended complaint that Dr. Corbier was the regional medical director. So he has a title that's above the other two.
Is there a primary physician here in charge of this case?
I did not see that in the amended complaint.
Is there anything in the record that shows that your client had access to the medical records, the sort of the cadre of medical records, not just the acute problem in front of him at the time?
I did not see that in the amended complaint. So Dr. Mohedin is not named specifically in any of the 75 factual allegations. They do name three other doctors, one administrator, and 11 nurses. The amended complaint seeks to have all of their acts and omissions attributed to Dr. Mohedin.
So there's nothing in the record to indicate whether the plaintiff had the medical records from the facility?
Are you asking about did the Dr. Mohedin have the records?
Or plaintiff's counsel?
I don't know, but The amended complaint is 44 pages and 158 paragraphs. I'm going to assume that they did have the medical records.
Did they attach any medical records?
Not that I'm aware of.
You say you assume they had the medical records from the depth of the paper, but do they reference any of the medical records or the facility's records?
They do. It mentions documentation several times. And what I had mentioned earlier all comes from the amended complaint.
Notes, physician notes.
Physician notes, I don't recall that necessarily, other than documentation generally. So let's jump ahead to my fourth rule. The district court cited Estelle as a clearly established law. But Estelle says that failure to provide adequate medical care does not violate the Constitution. And the rule from White v. Pauley that I mentioned earlier is it must identify a Supreme Court case or 10th Circuit decision where someone under similar circumstances was held to violate someone's constitutional rights. So in Estelle, there actually was no constitutional violation. That particular doctor in that particular case was not held to have violated the Constitution. He was not deliberately indifferent. And this court has said, simply quoting that standard from Estelle, is not enough to overcome qualified immunity. And we know some other things from Estelle. This sets forth some guiding principles. For example, medical malpractice does not become a constitutional violation just because the patient is a prisoner. The negligent diagnosis or negligent treatment does not violate the Eighth Amendment. The contention that more should have been done or that other treatment was available is a matter of medical judgment. And even unreasonable medical judgment is at most medical malpractice.
Why isn't the severity here of the patient's medical complaints enough to get you within clearly established territory? Judge Carson mentioned the Turkey versus Robinson case, 2014. Why, and that says that even if you don't have the exact medical condition, that you know, serious complaints can get you over the clearly established hurdle.
Well, a couple things. This court has said in Estelle, for example, that a failure to treat the condition must be obvious to a layman. The two
which case is that?
Self v. Crum. And the two examples it gives is a hand with gangrene or a serious laceration. So it must be obvious to a layman. And then we're also kind of getting into the territory of the egregiousness or obviousness. And that's never been applied in the prison medical care case that I'm aware of.
I mean, isn't one of the problems? I think there's some procedural issues floating around in this case too, but just looking at the case at the allegations in this case, I mean, it seems like they had a man dying before their very eyes in this case, and that it just was right in their face that it was happening, and that it's a little difficult, it seems, to say, well, gosh, you know, we had to have it where a layman would notice this. I mean, it struck me as problematic. I mean, if I saw someone exhibiting the way this guy was, it would, and I'm certainly not a medical professional, I mean, I think I would be very concerned about him and think that maybe he needs to be hospitalized.
Yes, the complaint does read like that. I can't disagree with that. But the key word that I heard from you is they. And I'm only here talking about Dr. Mohideen, and we don't have anything.
Well, he was one of them. I mean, it right in front of his face. I mean, there's no denial that he was part of the team, is there?
It's probably in the men complaint that way, but I'm not even sure of that, actually.
Okay, you don't dispute that he was a physician that had contact with the decedent, do you?
It's not the amended complaint.
So he's just someone who is in this case with zero allegations that he had any connection to the complaint, to the decedent at all.
That's how
Are you telling me if I take a line by line approach that I'm going to look in that complaint and there's going to be nothing that says he ever had any contact with the decedent?
The only time his name appears is paragraph 145. And with that, I'll like to reserve the rest of my time.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. First, I would like to start off with plaintiff's interpretation of the facts as referenced in plaintiff's First Amendment complaint. Plaintiff's first amended complaint will reflect that this case arises out of the death of Marquez Davis, who died April 13th, 2017.
Just to stay focused here, what did you allege that Dr. Mujahideen did vis-a-vis the decedent?
I have that listed out. 1 second, Your Honor.
Paragraph 145 of the complaint.
Well, Your Honor, in addition, or 145 does say that after Mr. Davis's abnormal MRI on April 11th, which showed evidence of tonsillar herniation, that's the brain being pushed down through the spinal column because of such a severe inflammation, that Dr. Mujahideen and...
How do we know that, about what the MRI results were?
Because it's stated in the factual section, Your Honor.
Okay, and where did you state that Dr. Mujahideen examined the results of the MRI?
That's not stated, Your Honor.
Well, we have 16 medical professionals and three medical doctors. Don't we need to know who did what?
Well,
constitutional deliberate indifference case like this?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I believe that, excuse me, that's better, that 145 is not the only paragraph that describes Defendant Mujahideen's failures. And while they are collectively listed in 144, I would assert, and plaintiffs would assert, that each of those is attributed to each of the defendants. And so we would say that he failed to provide him with the prompt medical attention, failed to make timely referrals, belatedly or untimely authorizing off-site specialty medical treatment, delayed or failed to respond to a serious medical need, utilized conservative treatment methodologies, failed to promptly transfer him from HCF to a hospital for diagnosis. HCF is Hutchinson Correctional Facility. Seriously aggravated his medical condition by ignoring his condition for 8 months. And ultimately...
Well, but the first time there's any involvement of Mujahideen is April 11th. Isn't that the first reference to him?
Specifically him and every other healthcare provider here were involved throughout the entire 8 months.
Is it alleged that Mujahideen was involved before April 11th?
It was alleged that he was a Chrisen healthcare physician that was treating Mr. Davis.
It specifies that he was treating Mr. Davis before the MRI? Or does it say that in the complaint?
It doesn't specifically say he was treating before the MRI. It's a very general specification, sir.
And isn't that the issue, that you've got a burden to be a little more specific than you were in your amended complaint? I mean, don't you have to put these folks on notice of what they did other than just a general, you didn't take care of him, so they can defend themselves?
Well, I don't think we had a general, you didn't take care of him. I think that plaintiffs have listed
you
it out.
You sort of did with respect to the doctorate issue in this case. I mean, because the allegations against him are pretty general and suggest that his involvement was late in the process.
Even if his only involvement was after the April 11th, 2017 MRI, I believe we have more than met our burden towards Dr. Mujahideen.
Do you have any evidence that he was aware of the decedent's medical history?
Dr. Mujahideen treated Mr. Davis throughout the entire 8 months. There are numerous entries in the medical record by Dr. Mujahideen in regard to Mr. Davis, and it continues throughout the 8 months. And
so I guess the next question is how can I tell that from the complaint?
I'm not sure if you can, Your Honor.
In the complaint, do you reference or cite corrections records?
In terms of direct cite, no, I do not, Your Honor. However, in the factual section, almost every statement is accompanied by a nurse documented or an indication that we gleaned it from a documentation in the medical record.
Medical records inside the corrections?
Yes, sir.
And does the record indicate that you had access before filing the complaint to the records of the corrections facility?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Can we get that from the record?
I believe so, yes.
The problem I'm having is I don't know anything about Moedin until the MRI. And I don't know whether it was him who suggested that the person, the plaintiff, be sent back to isolation rather than to a hospital.
Go ahead.
No.
Neither did the plaintiffs, Your Honor. When we were drafting the petition, and I'll state that I drafted the petition, we were unaware what the particular physician positions were on that MRI. We named the physicians that were involved, or at least we could tell were involved because their names were on the report or in the medical record concerning that event.
The records do not indicate who read the MRI?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Does it indicate any specialty of any of the three identified doctors and Dr. Doe?
No, Your Honor.
It's a relatively rare disease from which he died, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's not dispositive, of course, but it might bear on whether the failures here were clearly established by other cases. The district court relied on Estelle. If we write an opinion affirming you, should we rely on Estelle as the case that most clearly establishes their culpability here?
I think that Estelle is a good place to start for the general broad rule that deliberate indifference to serious medical needs violates constitutional rights. However, I don't believe that this case's factual scenario is similar to Estelle's. I believe the facts and the almost the shocking nature of what Mr. Davis went through threw up clear signs to the healthcare providers that were treating him that this man needed something more than what they were doing. He needed to go to a hospital. You don't watch some.
What's your best case for overcoming the clearly established?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that if we look to Lowe, this court has kind of changed gears a little bit on how they approach this standard. Previously, it was a sliding scale, I believe, established in Fogarty. And as far as I can tell, Lowe now directs the court to either look specifically for precedent that has similar factual scenario, or a case in which the facts are such an obvious fit to a general rule. And that's what we would rely on, Your Honor, is that the fact that this man was urinating and defecating on himself, that he was drinking his own urine, he was so confused, he was shaking, his fingers were in odd directions and were not normal. All of these being seen by these healthcare providers, there's no way that them putting him back in that cell and not getting...
You're saying it's an obviousness standard?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the defendant Moedin, is he an employee of the Department of Corrections or a contractor?
I believe that's in dispute, Your Honor.
What do you allege?
We would allege that he's an employee of...
Would you allege? What did you allege?
That he's an employee.
other are the other two named physicians employees?
I believe one of them is, and I believe it is in dispute for the other. I believe Dr. Corbier is an employee. I believe Dr. Sappho, his employment situation since. Dr. Doe, there hasn't been any discovery on Dr. Doe. We have not been permitted to get there yet, Your Honor. This case was stayed pending this appeal, and we've not been able to investigate that.
Well, you haven't done any discovery. Other than what you've done alone, you've done no court-sanctioned discovery, right?
We have done a few depositions. The plaintiffs have been deposed. Dr. Corbier has been deposed. Dr. Sappho has been deposed. And Dr. Mohiden has been deposed. Then around that time when we had many other depositions set up, this came up on appeal and the case was stayed. So unfortunately, we don't have some of that done, Judge. Plaintiffs would contend that when their First Amendment complaints viewed in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs, that their allegations, specifically the severity of Mr. Davis's symptoms that we've discussed, and Dr. Mohiden's alleged failure to provide care, especially in light of the MRI, that these are sufficient to state a plausible claim that Dr. Mohiden violated Mr. Davis has clearly established rights.
The other 15 medical professionals, the court denied motions as to dismiss as to them. So they're all still in the case. Is that correct?
They are all still in the case. Dr. Mohiden was the only
still in the case on all the other claims against him, except for the constitutional tort. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Take Mohiden's deposition before the dismissal or after the dismissal?
His deposition was taken after the district.
After the motion to dismiss.
His deposition was taken after the motion to dismiss was ruled upon by the district court.
You said discovery was stayed.
Well, that was one of the last things that we were able to do, Your Honor. And actually, in his deposition, I would point out, he said he did see the MRI, that he was in Florida when he saw the MRI and was planning on doing something about it when he got back to Kansas. I know that's not in the First Amendment complaint, but we started going there with his deposition. And if I believe that's all I have, unless the court would have other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Some rebuttal, Mr.
So I'll pick up. So even if you decide that paragraph 145 is enough, you still have to establish that the law was clearly established. And there's no case on point that we've heard today.
What about the Al Turkey case that we were talking about a minute ago? Are you familiar with it?
I'm sorry, I'm not. This court has said that general legal standards rarely establish clear rights, with one exception, only if the unlawfulness of the conduct is apparent from pre-existing law. In July, this court had a case captioned the initials AN, where a police department arrested a 16-year-old and then published her name and photo. There's a New Mexico statute that says you can't do that. So it was apparent and obvious from apparent law that you don't need a case to say what a statute already says. And that's what we think the obvious problem means. And here there's no law that requires hospitalization after an MRI or any of the other allegations that were obviously or clearly violated the law.
Counsel, your time's expired. We appreciate the arguments this morning. You're excused and the case shall be submitted. The court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.